Welcome to the True Falls Film Festival.
It would be very easy to make a kind of disrespectful film or to make fun of them, or that would be very easy to make like a kind of freak show reality thing like happens in this horror TV show. So we were very aware of we want to be very respectful.
This is the True False podcast presented by KBIA. I'm Allison Kofeld. In this episode, we talked to filmmakers Antonio Tibaldi and Alex Laura about their film, Thy Father's Chair, which played at True False in 2016. In the film, they work with two brothers who, after their parents died, quit throwing things away. True False co-creator Paul Sturtz spoke with Antonio and Alex about the way they built trust and maintained relationships with the somewhat unusual brothers they feature in the film.
I guess just a softball way to get into this, it's probably the most typical question to ask, which is, you know, how did you come to know of the two brothers, and then how did you approach them initially?
I met this lady called Nicole at a social type event where I didn't know many people, so I was talking to a few people and started talking to her, and she was telling me about what she did, which is she had these two companies that do kind of heavy duty cleaning in kind of extreme cases.
That's Antonio.
So we exchanged phone numbers and so forth. But then 6 months later, she got in touch with me and said that there was a house that was very interesting and that I should go and check it out. And she sent me some photographs. So I went there. Just really out of curiosity, because at that point I was busy with other things. I wasn't really going to embark in anything. And then when I went in and I met one of the two twins in his house, which was, it looked like, you know, there was an explosion or something in there. You know, it was really, really messy and dirty and smelly and all of that. But the person I met was just so interesting, I felt, and was really candid and very, very deeply honest and highly educated, but obviously deeply dysfunctional. And then when I understood the setup that was happening there, which was that the upstairs neighbor was the culprit of home, clean home, having been called in to try and resolve the situation, meaning that the actual people that lived in the house that had a hoarding issue were not the people willing to resolve the issue or do anything about it, but they were forced into the situation by the upstairs neighbor who would stop paying rent. I really thought that was kind of very unique and interesting setup for whatever it was, for I thought, oh, well, if I could start filming, it maybe would be interesting.
And could you describe the initial conversation you had when you met the brothers and how you came to get their permission to make the film?
I remember I felt kind of weird because I just wanted to go and take a look. I didn't want to be introduced as anything, you know, and then I would have assessed whether I wanted to do anything about it, you know, in terms of filming. So already I felt a bit self-conscious, to be very honest. And I was kind of, you know, when you're self-conscious, I think you become a bit shyer than you normally are. So I was kind of tiptoeing, well, actually literally tiptoeing, because that was the only way you could walk in there. But I was kind of, you know, self-conscious when I walked in, and he was, you know, he wasn't sure about this filmmaker. What was he going to do, and what was going to be his position? So it was kind of both people kind of being, I think, shy and self-conscious about each other. At least I felt that about myself, and I could read that on him too. But you know, we didn't speak very long. It was more like just 15, 20 minutes we sat, and he showed me to the only place where I could sit.
And so, Alex, you were seeing some of the initial footage that Antonio was shooting, and what was your initial reaction? Did you feel like something was there?
So, to be honest, I had mixed feelings. I was like, yeah, I mean, they are... they seem great characters, but on the other hand, I was thinking if this would go somewhere, you know, because they were all the time cleaning, and I didn't know if that was interesting, you know. So that was my first impression. Then Antonio was, you know, showing me other scenes, and we start talking, and then I was thinking that, yeah, that's why he was there for a week, no? I mean, something that I was not getting at the beginning, seeing at the images, but I kind of start to understand that there was another layer there.
Have to imagine that this is a particularly difficult location to film in. I mean, a number of the spaces are very tight. They're obviously very, very cluttered and chaotic. And Your shooting style is to be very much in the middle of it. It's by no means a distanced perspective. You're right up there. This must have been extraordinarily difficult to just move your body within that space. Could you talk about that?
Yeah, sure. This one was challenging for a number of reasons. One, because it was very dark in there. There's nowhere to walk because everything was cluttered with, I mean, you could walk, but I would make noise, and you're trying to not make noise. So I couldn't really move much. And the truth is there wasn't actually all that much room. The apartment is actually fairly large for a New York type apartment, but cluttered in the manner that it was cluttered. It was, not very practical in there. But I think the hardest thing to me, I remember, was the constant wondering whether I should continue this, you know. So it was actually more of like saying, you know, it's actually very challenging, very difficult. It smells, it's dirty. And then soon when we started filming, what you mentioned, that being close to the characters is almost the only way to do this if you're not wiring people with sound, and if you don't have a sound person, you have to have your microphone at a very fairly close distance to your subjects. And so that's one of the reasons for the proximity, is actually to actually be able to use the image and the sound.
Oh, so otherwise, the mic is attached to the camera itself?
Yes, I use like a system which I put a kind of high-end microphone on top of the camera with it's kind of a shotgun mic, kind of the best shotgun mic I can get. And then I use a preamplifier, and then I go straight into the camera. But what it means, though, is that I have to be, you know, can't be more than 4 or 5 feet, 6 feet maximum from the subjects. And if they don't speak up, then I won't get usable audio. And I'm, you know, I use the headset, so I'm aware of those restrictions. So it kind of forces to use wide angle lenses and come close, which I've grown to really like that kind of limitation and condition. And it goes right into what you were about, a bit the theme of what you're talking, which is this contact or relationship with your subject, where because you have to be so close to your subject, you're constantly renegotiating the idea or the reality of access, you know?
This is the True False Podcast, presented by KBIA. I'm Allison Kofel. Let's get back to True False's Paul Sturtz. He sat down with Antonio Tibaldi and Alex Laura, directors of Thy Father's Chair.
Talk a little bit, maybe just a specific example where you might have had a difference or a conflict around, you know, your access and how
Sure.
you got through that.
Well, there was, you know, there's a moment. I remember this moment. They were working on all the books, you know, and they really loved their book. So it was a nice kind of day and a half or whatever it was in the living room. They're going through and taking all the books down and cleaning them all and putting them back and cleaning the bookshelf and putting order in something they loved, which was nice to see. But there is a moment where one of them, finds a yearbook, and he opens it and starts looking through pictures of himself as a what I imagine picture of himself as a child, and of his brother, twin brother, and the other brother. And of course, instinctively, I'm kind of turning towards him and kind of literally plunging with my camera, because I use a prime lens, so I can't really zoom. I have to actually, if I want to make a bigger screen size, I have to get closer with the camera. So I'm getting closer, and he feels me coming, you know, behind him, but at an angle behind him. And so he turns away and says, no, you know, and he closes the book, you know, and hides it. And that was it. We never got that, you know. I never asked him to, could I see it? Could I, you know, it was, to me, it was very clear that that was off limits.
So if you're trying to understand what was happening in that moment, was he embarrassed by how he looks in the yearbook picture?
He, there's a part that he was extremely open to allowing a lot of things to be filmed, but then there was areas that were just off limits, and I never really asked him. You know, one thing that I decided making this film, but that I kind of apply pretty much to whatever I do, is I never ask anybody to repeat anything, meaning redo anything. The way I look at it is, if I catch it, it was meant to be, and if I don't catch it, it wasn't meant to be. And I may have a second shot at it, because things tend to repeat themselves in life. So if you're just patient and you missed something and you wish you had it, then you say, well, maybe it will happen again, you know?
Well, that takes a lot of discipline.
It takes a lot of discipline, but at the end, it's like, it's almost like, it also forces, I'm talking about me, but I could say forces you. It forces anybody who really takes this and adopts it as a discipline. It forces you to realize that you don't really control what happens in front of the camera, or you shouldn't. You only really control the way you are able to film it, which is, it's a big difference. Alex and I both do fiction also, and I think the challenge to me of doing documentary is giving that up completely, giving it up 100%. You know, if you do fiction, you write a script and you call actors and then you even call action and you call stop and you can redo it at a different angle. And so you have, ultimately, you have unlimited control and you can ask actors to do things in a different way with a different intention. I feel like when you're doing observational filmmaking, you're really doing the opposite of that. You know, you're just hoping that you're picking a moment where interesting things might occur. And then it's your task, your challenge, your job, if you will, to record it in a way that's going to be usable.
So talking about observational filmmaking, I'm sure that's a phrase that quite a few people know, but not everyone does. And for me, it's the most pure kind of nonfiction filmmaking where. You know, as you say, you know, you allow the action to unfold. But, you know, this is, it's incredibly difficult to do what you've accomplished here. You know, because oftentimes, you know, the director lets life unfold and then it's just plain dull. You know, nothing happens.
Yeah.
Or,
yeah.
You know, the characters, you know, don't develop in a compelling way. So, I mean, were there moments early on where you were like, maybe this isn't going to add up to anything?
Constantly. And that's why having Alex not be present while the main part of the shooting was happening. But I felt that I wasn't alone, although I was alone filming it. Alex knew that I was doing this, and I kind of talked to him on a daily basis. And
so do you share the same philosophy with Antonio about not instigating any action or, you know, getting into the middle of things?
The truth is I met Antonio at City College because I went there to study fiction, narrative. I mean, I wanted to make narrative films. And one of the exercises that he proposed was to make a kind of an observational documentary, you know, and I was kind of reluctant to do that. But then I tried it and I found a subject and just did that, was just observating. And I kind of fell in love on that way of making films. So in a way, it was something that I never tried, but I suddenly felt that it was very, very interesting. And that's how we started to collaborate, because in a way, I feel that we speak the same language.
I wanted to move into some, I guess, sensitive ground. I think, you know, I don't think anyone could dispute that the two brothers, Avraham and Shraga, are, troubled characters. You know, they're seemingly alcoholic, have some kind of mental illness. They're certainly grieving and distraught, and so there's sort of this unequal relationship, between a director and subject when directors come into the lives of people like that. You know, my feeling is that this film is remarkable in its empathy, and that you're very much walking in their shoes and not being condescending in any way. But I think there are a ton of pitfalls, you know, that you could get yourself into, you know, where an audience would feel very, very uncomfortable with there being this asymmetrical relationship. And so I wanted to hear you both talk about that and how you steered clear of this, uncomfortable power dynamic that would, could perhaps be condescending.
There is something compelling, and when I say compelling, is a feeling that you have for the subjects, and I think I call it love. You know, you love a great part of them. I felt there was something very that I really, really appreciated in both of them. Appreciated as a human being, that they were very, very honest and candid, and in a way that adults usually are not, or none anymore. And so I felt, okay, if you can serve that humanity with the camera, then it's already worthwhile. And if I can learn from it by being exposed to it, maybe some of it will rub into me too, you know? Mm. So that's something that you could apply that to almost anything you do. And then if you have this relationship, which I would say a relationship of love with your subject, then there is no real danger that you will fall into being condescending or judgmental, because you are trying to honor that and treasure that, which goes beyond the fact that they may be dysfunctional, they may have mental issues, they may have all these things. But you know, you can still look at level with that and say, okay, I'm not going to, there's no judgment to be made on human condition, just empathy. And so that their openness and their humanity, if you try and give that back with the camera, it equals, you know, it becomes like, okay, well, you know, certain things were filmed and we didn't put them because they were not, number one, they were not representative. And I felt they weren't fair, because they were kind of stolen moments that maybe they wouldn't have liked us to use, you know?
Alex, can you interject just for a second and talk about what Antonio was calling stolen moments, the maybe great scenes that would have played well, but that you both felt uncomfortable about including?
Yeah, sure. There were some private moments that we questioned if we should include in the footage, and what they were really, you know, bringing in the story. And also, we talk a lot about this, that it would be very easy to make a kind of disrespectful film or something, you know, or make fun of them, or that would be very easy to make like a kind of freak show or reality thing. whenever we would have a doubt, a slightly, you know, doubt, that then we would just put that in quarantine, you know.
This is the True False Podcast, presented by KBIA. I'm Allison Kofeldt. In Thy Father's Chair, Antonio Tibaldi and Alex Laura present a story of two brothers in Brooklyn when professional cleaners come to their home. The film is a chamber piece. It takes place inside the brothers' quarters and in the space nearby. Let's get back to Paul's interview with Antonio and Alex.
This sounds very nosy of me to ask this question, but I'm wondering if Alex and Antonio, you could talk about a moment that you didn't include.
I remember one. I'll give you an example. We at some point earlier in the editing, we had right now the film is almost like a week low. You know, it's a chamber piece. It's all in the house. It's house and surroundings, meaning house and courtyard. So the film never ventures away from the house. Actually, what had happened, there was a substantial amount of footage that was in the van, because what I would do is I would meet the crew at the place where they always meet, which is outside the home clean home office, and get my gear into the van and then ride with the van and the cleaners to the house. And because I was there ready to shoot, I shot pretty much every day going to the house and returning with the crew. And so we had, say, I don't know, 15% of the footage was actually in the vans. And there was some, there was some really interesting things that were being said, both in anticipation of going into work and both returning amongst the workers, almost like letting out steam of stuff they had seen, because, you know, it's hard work what they do, too. And so there were moments where they were being almost a little bit, I'm not saying bullying, but they were kind of not talking down, but they were kind of letting out steam about what some of the stuff they had just seen, and making fun of Anand, making fun of the twins, making fun of the third one who showed up for a minute and then went away. And the truth is, we had put some of those in earlier cuts, and then we realized, for a number of reasons, but one of which was it really changes the point of view, for one, but it also changes they were away from the subjects commenting on them. So it was like taking them in a bubble, and they even maybe forgot that I was filming. And so again, it was those stolen moments, and they were, I guess they knew I was filming, but they maybe didn't fully realize what they were saying.
The overall portrait that you do of the cleaners is really remarkable. I mean, I feel like this is what elevates the film into something, perhaps sublime, in that their attitude that's depicted on screen is just so compassionate and so helpful. They're trying to help these brothers in a really genuine way, that, like you say, is not judgmental, and it mirrors your relationship with the brothers. I just think there's so much there to teach other filmmakers about, you know, how to approach the director-subject relationship. I mean, I don't think that's something you can completely will into being, because sometimes you'll be dealing with completely unsympathetic characters. And so, you know, it sounds like there was a little bit of luck in that you did feel that love. And I'd love to hear you talk some more about that.
Yeah, I think it's a very interesting subject. I think, you know, when you talk about films and people, some people make these huge distinctions between fiction and documentary, and I deeply don't. I feel like I do both, and it's almost like the same coin. Let's say you're an actor and you have to portray Hitler. Nobody loves Hitler, but you have to find a humanity in him to portray him in a way that is going to be truthful and is going to be convincing and is going to be authentic. If you portray him as an evil monster who killed 6 million Jews and destroyed the world, then it's going to be a buffoon character, and it's not going to be interesting to see that, and not authentic even. And so I was, you know, I think it in the same way that, you know, sometimes you may meet, like in a documentary situation, you may let's say, having you will meet, let's say, the last survivor of a SS who tortured people during World War II, who did terrible things in, let's say, in concentration camps. Well, you have to, you know, figure out a way to have an in with them and get over your judgment of what they have done, and allow a door to open so that they will. And it's not tricking them. It's just seeing the small part. There must be something, when I say lovable, I mean something human, something that you recognize as worthy of being alive in any human being. There must be. And it's your task to find that, I think, if you're going to film them. I really do believe that.
Alex, can you talk about that as well?
This is something that I really admire from Antonio, because this love gets contagious. As I was saying, when I was seeing the first images of the film, I was not totally convinced that there would be something there. But through the dogs, and also, you know, through the way it's shot, I start also to feel that love, and, you know, and feel very engaged in the brothers. So, and I think that's the secret to you know, to be happy with what you do. Have this approach, be respectful, and kind of feel that love that at the end translate in passion about what you do, no?
To me, the heart of the film is this push and pull interplay between these incredibly sympathetic cleaners and these very complex brothers, you know, who, you know, go through, you know, four or five different attitudes or emotions, you know, over the course of the film and back and forth. And I think it's, the film is so much bigger than the specifics, but I really do appreciate how, as you say, how specific and defined the characters and the situation is, but I think there's something much, much bigger happening in this film, and I think
yes,
that's what makes it transcendent.
Yes, and the themes you take, I'm not dismissing them, in the sense I don't think that there isn't a danger of the arguments you're touching upon. I think it is a risk for sure. But now, does it mean that then you just don't do these things, or should we have done them differently? It's possible. You know, we did think about it a lot and address them, and but that doesn't mean that, you know, we may hurt some sensitivities. It's completely possible and legitimate, you know. Somebody, there was a New York screening the other day at the Doc New York City, and some woman, you know, the first question at the Q&A, this woman raised her hand and said, "This movie was not uplifting." And I was like, okay, well, that's legitimate. I don't know who told you it was going to be necessarily uplifting.
Wow, is that a requirement these days for films, that they all have to uplift?
I don't know. Maybe it was soon after the election. Like, maybe I'd made a comment just before the movie started. I didn't mean it that it was going to be uplifting. I just meant it that it was like literally a few days after the result of the presidential election. And I said, this is an opportunity to leave that stuff behind and kind of, you know, dive into the screen, and it will take you to a place that you probably haven't seen.
I think that if we want to talk about this film in relation to, say, the new regime, it's actually a really terrific antidote, in that it's such a complex portrayal of humanity in contrast with some very simple-minded kind of formulations about how the world works. So I'm uplifted by it. Maybe I should have gotten up after her to say that.
We want to thank Antonio and Alex for talking about their film and the experiences they had with the two brothers. We also want to thank them for coming to True False in 2016. To learn about the release schedule for Thy Father's Chair, visit thyfatherschair.com. Keep an eye out for the film in limited theaters this fall. To listen to more of our episodes, go to kbia.org or download them on iTunes. And as always, feel free to leave us a review. This episode was produced by Callie Luna and edited by Bram Sablesmith and Ryan Famuliner. Our music was created by Tim Pilcher using sounds of the True False Film Fest. We also featured the song Into the Light by Marissa Anderson. Special thanks to Haley Godburn, Danielle Hogarty, and Todd Chin. I'm Allison Kofeld. Thanks for listening.